That's just one of those things that happen. We're going to talk about a different kind of endurance. Okay? And our text, I know there's a passage in Hebrews that talks about the need for endurance. We'll look at that later. But right now our text is Hebrews chapter 3, verse 14. Several years ago, I remember seeing this passage and listening to a sermon. I cannot remember who it was to say it. I just can't do it. But in the sermon, the remark was made about this idea that it's impossible to fall away. Now, if it's impossible to fall away, why do we have a passage like this? If we become partakers of Christ, if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end. So there's something that's my responsibility. I'm accountable for my responsibility that I need, all of us need, to hold our, be partakers of Christ, and from the beginning all the way to the end. It's not just, well, here you are, now you're a Christian, and it's all over, and don't worry about it anymore. No. There's this little thing that enters in there called endurance. And endurance comes in a lot of different ways and a lot of different forms. And we recognize, you know, endurance and the value of it in so many different venues. Now, I like sports. I generally like baseball, I like hockey. I don't care for the others. But I thought that one of the greatest illustrations of endurance to occur in the past few years was this consecutive game playing streak of Cal Ripken Jr. I tell you what, you know, he played from May 30th, 1982 until September 20th of 1998, 17 years, never missed a game. 2,632 consecutive games. How many consecutive days at work do you have? Makes it kind of a little bit of a different comparison, doesn't it? Now, in that length of time, he played, I've been told, with 29 different double play partners. I mean, the second baseman, different second baseman. He played through grueling travel schedules, doubleheaders, injuries, sickness, distractions, such as media interviews, mostly about the streak, sponsor appearances. Furthermore, he started every one of those games. It wasn't that they, you know, Lou Gehrig's record is kind of, you know, you look into it and you find out, you know, Lou Gehrig had some back issues one time and they just would run him up there as a pinch hitter. Well, he played in the game. Yeah, sure, that's technically all that's necessary. But now, Ripken didn't do that. He started 2,632 games. Now, what that means is he was there every time and he was there on time, wasn't he? Right at the start of the game. Because when that game's ready to start, they don't say, wait a minute, our shortstop is held up in traffic or something. No. Every game. And I thought to myself, you know, that's just remarkable. And through something like this, you've got to retain a certain amount of zeal. And he was remarkable, you know, for that. And not only so, his courteousness to fans and reporters and other things, you know, this is all on record. He's not playing anymore, so that's all something that can be found out. Now, as a side note, in our day and age, during this streak, he also had the same wife the whole length of time. Something else, I'm afraid, in our day and age is not happening as often as it should. But I think about that, and of course, you know, we understand that, and it's easy to pass that off. Well, look at how much he's making, and other things like that, blah, 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 blah. All right, fine. But you know what? It was somebody who was asked on a number of occasions, do you want to take a break? You want to set one out? You know, rest up just a little bit. I think even LeBron James does that, doesn't he? Apparently, much to everybody's consternation, but no, I'll play. I'm here. I'll play. And I think about that. Well, yeah. And I thought to myself, well, it's not just a sports figure that needs to have some endurance. But I think Christians need endurance as well. Our commitment to Jesus must be maintained all the days of our life. All of them. not just once in a while, not just when things are going well, not just whenever the mood hits us or when it's convenient or when there's not some distraction or whatever the case is, all the time. Yeah. And I think of a passage like Hebrews chapter 3, verse 6, if we hold fast the confidence firm until the end, which says about what our text did as well, didn't it? That's right. And then we find that Paul writes in Colossians chapter 1 and verse 23, if indeed you continue in the faith, firmly established and steadfast. Now this part of it right here, this firmly established and steadfast, I think whenever that's the case, then endurance basically becomes part of our nature. Eternal life is not some honor that's gained by a limited portion of life given to God. But I think sometimes we think it is. No. We understand that all through the Scriptures it's calling for more than just a limited portion of life given to God. And then there's another thing I want us to consider. That while there is a need for endurance, that essentially means that there might be times when there's a lack of endurance. Yeah, there is. One of the things about a lack of endurance is that it's a sign of immaturity. That's right. And I understand, you know, don't we see that in children? Oh, you see that in children, don't you? You know, if they're promised something or they know something's coming, you know, man, I mean to tell you now, how are they going to endure this? How are they about waiting? Martha and I were talking about our nephew. He's not married, but he's got a couple of kids and other things. He's not married. He lives with much to our consternation, but anyway. But he's old enough, you know, that he's got children of his own now. And we were talking about whenever he was a youngster, and we lived in West Virginia. And the family there, his family, Martha's brother family, were on the way to visit us. And it was about an 8-hour drive, easy with children, because we'd made the trip the other way with children. It's an 8-hour. I could make it in 6.5, but the wife and the kids added more to it. Kids more than anything else. You know, they've got to stop and go to the restroom every half hour. Anyway. So they leave Shoals, and they drove to where the state forest is at. I'm going to guess that's 4 miles out of town. And Joel pipes up from the back seat, "Are we there yet?" Who hadn't heard of that? That's immaturity. A lack of endurance, sure, in children, yeah. But adults, you know, we ought to be better, right? When we mature, one of the things we gain is the ability to have, possess, and show endurance. Do you know whenever there's the case over there in Acts chapter 15, verse 37, 38, you know how it is. Mark had gone with Barnabas and Paul, and things happened. It doesn't go into great details, but things happened, and Mark decided that he was done with this, and he left them. So what is that? His defection there was evidence of his immaturity. Now, later on, you find that Paul calls for Mark and wants Mark to accompany him. Well, the only reason he would do that is that Mark got over this. Mark gained a level of maturity to whether now you will be of value. I'm going to tell you what, whenever he left, how much value was he? You know, we had this guy where I worked. You know, it was a 7-day operation. And there would be guys, you know, they'd take off once in a while. And the grind got to you. I mean, you'd work from Memorial Day to the 4th of July. You didn't have a break. Then you'd work from the 4th of July till Labor Day every day. You could only blame somebody for taking the day off every once in a while. Anyway, you can understand it. But we had these guys, they take off, you know, several times. And it wasn't because they were just wore out from the shift work or other things like that. That wasn't it. They just took off to take off. And I was working for a foreman, and we had a fellow there. And boy, I mean, he had really been, his attendance had just been awful. And his last name was Stone, so everybody cleverly called him Stoney. And so this foreman came up to him one day, and he said, "Stoney," he said, "you know," he said, "you're a good man." He said, "you do your job just so good." He said, "I never have to bother checking on you and one thing or another." He said, "you know, you're right there, you're doing your job." But he said, "when you're not here, you're not worth 2 cents." Duh. You know. Well, you've lost your value. Mark had lost his value when he left. Now, if he'd stayed and tried to do something, he would have gained, and he could have contributed something. But all that's moot, isn't it? Because I'm out of here. Immaturity. Look what it costs. So yeah, that's right. Children don't understand the rigors of something like commitment or the value of enduring hardship. They don't understand that. And sooner or later, they're going to have to learn this. You know, there's these times, you know, haven't we all done that with our children? They're just itching to try something that you can do so well because of experience, time, and everything else like that. And they're just itching to do it. And you go ahead and let them. And they get started, and it becomes very apparent, in our case, very apparent. I mean, now Daniel always wanted to do everything Dad did. And all right, and it would just be just a little bit, you know. And he'd come to find out he couldn't even hardly drive a nail. Not that I'm great at it, but you know what I mean. And but you got to let them do this to learn how it's done and what to do and to become more proficient in what you're doing. Sure, we all understand that. And sometimes that means, you know, enduring some hardship. Now, the Hebrew brethren, we're looking, going to look at a lot of passages from Hebrew, but the Hebrew brethren, look at Hebrews chapter 5. In Hebrews chapter 5, the Hebrew brethren were being criticized for immaturity. Look at chapter 5, verses 12 through 14. "For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracles of God. You have come to need milk and not solid food." Do you see the disappointment between the lines here? "For everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the work of righteousness, for he is a babe." Now, if they were just babes, but now they're beyond this. They ought to be doing better, and they're not. "Solid food belongs to those who are of full age." Some translations have, "who are mature" or "full grown." That's the idea of the word that translated there. That is, "those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil." Now, if these brethren are immature, and that was the real problem there. They were immature in the faith. Not physically immature. You're immature in the faith, and you've just kind of stayed there. You've hit a plateau. Maybe there's not opportunities to grow. I don't know. Possible. Or maybe it's just I've reached this level right here, and that's good enough. And I'm not going any further than this right here, what I've attained. Well, that's possible as well. But the thing of it is, if they're this immature, as he's saying this right here, what do you suppose their endurance level would be? Now, I'm not going to suggest to you it's going to be exactly identical to their level of immaturity. But I'm going to tell you what. I'd say it's pretty close. Now, we can see, you know, what the problem is. We can identify it. We see what he's saying. We know what the solution is. But think about what's going on while all this is happening. You ought to be teaching people. And you're not. You'll be able to handle these things. You'll be able to discern good and evil. And you can't. What happens when things really get tough? Lack of endurance is often a lack of interest. Here's the thing. I will endure anything for that which I enjoy. And you will too, won't you? That's right. I was watching something on TV and these people were waiting on these people to come in. It was a detective show, and it was Law and Order, and so the DA was waiting on the chief to come in. Well, where's he at? And they were sitting there waiting. Well, he's at the opera. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, oh, the opera, oh boy. I mean, to a Hoosier hillbilly, me, the opera, no. But there are people that will go to that. You know why they go to that? And they will endure the opera. They'll endure this, and here's people up there, and you know, and they sound like a barn animal that's backed into a nail when they're singing. And they're going, and it's for the longest period of time, and most of the time, it's in a language that 4/5 of the audience doesn't understand. We went to a wedding, and these people got up to sing during the wedding, and they said they were singing from an opera or something. I think they were singing in Italian. It might as well have been Apache, as far as I was concerned. I didn't understand a word of it. But people will endure things that they enjoy. Apparently, this man enjoyed, so there he is, and he'll set through the whole thing. Me, oh my. Well, I wouldn't go, and if I did go, I'd be thinking of ways I could get out of there. You know, where's the tunnel at that I can get out of here? You know, that. But we do that, don't we? And you do that, don't you? You'll endure something that you enjoy. Sure you will. And then on the other hand, for things that I merely feel obligated to, I can easily find excuses to avoid those things. I'm afraid too many times in churches, we've got folks that think, I'm just going to do whatever I'm obligated to do. And that'll be right down there at the minimum. And then if there comes some excuse, not a reason, an excuse to avoid, well, there it goes. That's how it works, isn't it? That's how it works in a lot of things. We need to enjoy being a Christian and enjoy serving God in various ways. If we don't do that, then Satan is going to give us plenty of excuses to avoid doing what's expected of us. That's why there's a need for endurance. That's why it's better for us, for me, for you, for all of us. There's also the exhortation that you find over here in Hebrews chapter 6. Now you might turn there and mark that. But Hebrews chapter 6, verses 11 and 12. We desire that each one of you show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope until the end, that you do not become sluggish, but imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promise. Sluggish, the translation has here, New King James. Some translations may have lazy there. But you see, he knows what the problem is, and he's trying to give them some words of encouragement. Now, we've got to show the same diligence as from the beginning, that we show all the way through. Let's not become, you know, sluggish in this. You show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope until the end. Where's the stopping place? Did you ever watch somebody run a race? I ran track in college and cross country. I just despised cross country, but I ran track. And you know, one of the things I found out is that whenever you know you're down there and you're in the blocks and you're ready to go, and they got that guy and you know the ready set, and then he fires the pistol. Now you can count the seconds. That's what we were told. 2 seconds between the set and firing the gun. That's what they're supposed to do. So it's 1,000, 1,000, get a quick start. That's what we were all told. Generally it worked. But when that gun went off, the finish line wasn't there. It wasn't right there. You didn't just shoot out of those blocks and there it is, it's over. The gun wasn't the end, it was the beginning, wasn't it? And if you're going to do anything in that race, you go all the way to the end. You know, I can remember one time running a different type of race. two laps. I got through a lap and two-thirds, and I felt my hamstring check out. And I was right with the guy that was first, and I had to step off the track. I could not run anymore. You know what I got for that race? A pat on the back and lots of sympathy. That's about it. I never made it to the finish line, you see. So you go all the way through. We understand that in something as mundane as a race. How about running the Christian race? It's all the way to the end, to the finish line. The diligence of Hebrews in the earlier service is mentioned there in verse 10. God is not unjust to forget you or to forget your work and love. Labor of love which you have shown toward His name in that you have ministered to the saints and do many. You've done lots of good things. But don't quit doing that. It's then the message in verse 11. You see, every ball player goes through a slump. Even Cal Ripken went through slumps. And that can kind of happen to us. We can go through a slump. But we need to recall the former days and then recover our enthusiasm. Look at Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 32, real quick here. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 32, recall the former days in which, after you were illuminated, you endured a great struggle with sufferings. Whenever the Christians in 1 Peter and 2 Peter were going to be suffering, one of the things that Peter writes to them, he says, I'm writing these things to stir up your memory, to bring these things to your remembrance. That you can remember these kinds of things. And you can draw something from that that will help you in these times. And that's what he's saying here as well. So we recall the former days, and then we can perhaps recover our enthusiasm. Now again, as it said there in verse 12, we must not become sluggish. Now, it's possible that we don't quit. We don't quit. But we might lose our incentive to try hard. That's right. That could happen. But now we're told over there in Hebrews chapter 12. In Hebrews chapter 12, and it's in the second part there. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1. I have here, let us lay aside every weight, the New King James. Other translations have, lay aside every encumbrance. That's right. You know, if you ran in a race, as he's talking about here, you don't run in a race with a refrigerator on your back. You get rid of that. So we need to lay some of these things aside. And it might be something like this, that there are others who have disappointed us. Do you ever think about that? Whenever someone that you thought would never fall by the wayside and they do, what is that? Does that have an effect? Of course it has an effect. Some folks decide, well, you know, they just give it up. I just can't go on because they didn't. Whatever. No, this is all an individual type of thing. Then there are those that are among the lost. They're not interested. There's the overcommitment to things of the world. We overcommit to the things of the world, and then what's it? Well, we don't have any energy left for God because, well, I'm just overcommitted with everything. You know what? I think the number one excuse that I've heard, 36 years now, and the number one excuse I've heard, I just don't have enough time. Who's the master of your time? Who's the master of your time? I know who's the master of my time. I am. Well, who's the master of yours? Well, pretty much you are. Don't say that it's my wife tells me how much time I've got or my husband. No, you've got it. And you'll submit to whatever you want to once again. Voluntarily done here. So overcommitment, well, you know, that's something I've got to take care of personally. He talks about the sin which so easily entangles us or ensnares us. I like entangles better. That's why I've got that up there. That's in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1 at the latter part of it. The sin is so easily into, you know, that's unbelief. But unbelief is something that develops. Unbelief is like belief. If belief develops, unbelief develops as well. It goes in the other direction. Where unbelief starts out and it grows, here you've got unbelief, and what does it do? Well, it starts out and it grows too. Just in a different direction. So we need endurance. We need to be able to spot something like this and then practice some endurance. In Hebrews chapter 12, Hebrews chapter 6. You go back over there and we look at verse 12. It talks about imitating those who through faith and patience endure, inherit the promises. Had a young man, I made a remark. A young fellow back in Indianapolis, he's wanting to know of a preacher's name. It was the first preacher at their church there in Indianapolis. And he didn't know about the name. The name was Loren, L-O-R-E-N. And he had it on there and he had it spelled about every way he could think of. One of them was a girl's name. Obviously, that wasn't it. But anyway, and so I told him what the name was. And he wanted to know if I had a picture. And I said, yeah, I've got a picture of him. I said, I'll send it to you. So I sent it to him. I said, now, this is the way I knew him, you know, when I met him. He looked like this. He was an older man. This back in the 80s. And he was in his 80s. He'd been born in the latter part of the 19th century. And so he wanted to know more information, one thing or another. And he said, is there a biography available? I said, yes, there is. I said, I've got the biography that was used on his passing. I said, I'll send it to you. I didn't write it, but I'll send it to you. And so we went back and forth on that one thing. And I thought, well, you know, what an example Brother Raines was in all the things that happened over all the years and everything that he would have seen in 70-some years of preaching and teaching school. He was a school teacher, a principal, a superintendent in Indianapolis and in Bloomington and Bedford in Indiana, all big towns or cities. And to think about all the things and, you know, just, and right at the last, you know, when he was 90, he put together this workbook thing. And it's called A Survey of the New Testament. And it went through the whole New Testament, outlined every book. Now, he did that on an old typewriter and it was going to be mimeographed. They didn't have computers back then. If they did, he wouldn't have one. But anyway. And he did all that for the church in Bedford to use in their Bible study. One of the last things he did when he was close to 90 years old. That's remarkable, isn't it? Really was. And to think that right up to the last, you know, he was active in serving the Lord. That's what he was interested in all the time. So I think that there are other examples like that. And so, you know, we ought to imitate those who are showing these things and through faith and patience and know what endurance is all about and are giving us examples of it. In Hebrews chapter 6, after verse 12, he goes into the verses 13 through 15 and talks about a character that's talked about so many times in the New Testament. Think about Abraham. Abraham. When God made a promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself, saying, surely, blessing, I will bless you. And multiplying, I will multiply you. And so after he had patiently endured, that Abraham had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. You think about all the time that went by before he got that promise of the Son. You see where it says in John chapter 8 and verse 56 that Jesus said, Abraham saw my day. How did he see it? He saw it by faith, didn't he? Of course he did. And what else do we find? In Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1, the first part, we have so great a cloud of witnesses that are surrounding us. Well, and what are we doing? And above all, one of the things we ought to do, realizing all this is happening, well, we ought to be fixing our eyes on Jesus. Looking unto Jesus, chapter 12, verse 2, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who, once again, endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. Well, there's Jesus. He's enduring over there, isn't he? And what are we supposed to do? Follow the example of Jesus. And so what should we be doing? Well, we ought to be enduring. Tough things might happen, but we're to endure all the way to the end. Just like Jesus did. That's right. Now let me just say something here for just a second about endurance and commitment. Now, those of us that are Christians, we're not committed to a sport or to a building or to some heritage or tradition. You know, I've been noticing something from what we call our liberal brethren. There's this tendency today. They've divided up the brotherhood. And they, now they start calling them all traditions. They say, it's our non-instrumental tradition. It's the anti-institution tradition. And everything's a tradition now. It's like they've discovered this word, and I thought to myself, no, you didn't. It's been around for centuries. But it's like they discovered a new word, you know. And they're using it to death. And frankly, I find it pejorative, which means it's accusatory. And I find it insulting. I guess I would be part of this anti-instrumental music tradition. Are we opposing instrumental music because of tradition? If we are, I must have missed the memo or been napping whenever it was handed out. I didn't think we did it because of tradition. And if we are doing it because of tradition, shame on us. I thought it was because of what was said in the Word of God. I wouldn't give 2 cents for something that we've been doing for all this time and drawing a line in the sand because it's just some tradition. I know there are people that are willing to do that because of some kind of tradition. You've preached in a church for years and years and years, and they would cover the Lord's Supper with this white linen cloth. You know why they covered the Lord's Supper with the white linen cloth? Because when they first started meeting there, they didn't have air conditioning. Oh my, how they must have suffered. Oh, the pain. But they didn't have air conditioning. And so what did they do? They had the windows open. Guess what? Probably no screens in the window. So what do you do about the Lord's Supper? You know what's going to happen, don't you, in a situation like that? You're going to have unwelcome visitors come up there to Lord's Supper, right? Right? So they covered it up with that linen cloth. But guess what happened? They got good windows. They got air conditioning and everything. They didn't have those unwelcome airborne visitors coming in anymore. And yet the wet linen cloth was still there. Now you try and get that white linen cloth out of there. Are you ready? You got a real fight. Why? Because they're wedded to a tradition. Any white linen cloth there in the Scriptures anywhere? No. No. It was a good thing. But you know what? It's just a tradition. If you take that off of there, I could just hear the arguments. If we take that off of there, then we're not really having the Lord's Supper anymore. Oh, I've heard that so many times on any number of things. That's what happens when it's a tradition. But we're not doing this because of tradition. We're doing the things that we do not because we're committed to a person, We're committed to the one who loved us and gave himself for us. Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. I've been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. The word commitment's not in that verse, but it's right there between every word, isn't it? That's right. Jesus was committed to being crucified for me. I need to be committed to live for him. And that's the faith that I live, is out of commitment to Jesus Christ and to nothing else. Nothing else but that. Do you know, you hear some think what can be accomplished by people that have, you know, singular commitment. And here's another thing, and endurance. You ever think about that? Now, sometimes something's committed. It takes a little while to accomplish something. I looked up the dates. I wanted to see exactly how long this was. On May the 25th, 1961, Jack Kennedy was our president. Our country was embarrassed by the space race. At this point, the Russians had sent a man up to orbit the Earth. The best thing we did was put some poor guy on the top of a rocket and shoot him out into the Atlantic Ocean. It was a great accomplishment for our space program, but look how far behind we were. And we were embarrassed by it. And so on May the 25th, 1961, President John Fitzgerald Kennedy gave a speech and committed the country to the space race. And that day, he said, there's no reason why we can't put a man on the moon before the end of the decade. Now, that would have been about 9 years away. In 8 years and 56 days, on July the 7th, on July the 20th, 1969, Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon. Less than a decade? Yeah. 8 years and 50. Why? Because we were committed to it. And we endured. We realized it was a big job. Him giving that speech, okay, we'll have that by the weekend. Are you kidding me? No. No. Some things might happen quicker than others. But sometimes it's a long-term thing. To the moon in less than a decade, you think about it. And also now, this is the last thing I'd like for us to consider. Hebrews chapter 10. I said we'd look at this. We're going to look at it now. Hebrews chapter 10 at the end here, starting in verse 36. Now, after encouraging them in verse 35, therefore do not cast away your confidence, which has great reward. Great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise. For yet a little while, and he who is coming will come and will not tarry, and the just shall live by faith. If anyone draws back, if anyone doesn't endure, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who draw back to perdition, but of those who believe to the saving of the soul, to those who endure. There's no reward in quitting, but there's a great reward in enduring. Take your songbook, turn to the song that's been selected, if you will. Now the Lord has promised a crown of life. That's in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8. But he's promised a crown of life to those who we would say who endure to the end. I think based on what we've looked at today as well as a number of other things. But you know what? Before you can endure to the end, you got to start. You know, before I ever ran a race in high school, college or whatever it was, the first thing I had to do was enter the race, or have the coach would enter us in the race, whatever the case is. The first thing, you got to get in the race. Then you run the race. Then endurance kicks in. Now, to enter the race, you need to believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and to repent of your sins, to turn away from them, to practice them no more. Jesus said, unless you believe I am He, you will die in your sins. John chapter 8, verse 24. Unless you repent, you will all likewise perish. Confess Him before men. He'll confess you before the Father. Matthew chapter 10, verse 32. Would you be ashamed to say, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? There wouldn't be any shame in saying that. But now we all really mean that when we say it. And then, to be baptized. Because Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized will be saved. So a person is baptized, and you start. You're right there. That's where the race starts. And then you go all the way to the finish line. And he that goes all the way to the finish line is the one that will receive the crown of life. Can we help you today to do that, to begin today? All things are ready. We'd be happy to assist you in your obedience. If you've fallen by the wayside, this is one of those opportunities. You know, in a race, like in track and field, when you step off the track, you can't go back on there again. You're disqualified. There's no second chance in a track meet. But you get a second chance with God. You can turn your life around. You can renew your interest, recall your former faith. And you can go to God in prayer and ask for forgiveness. And once again, you'd find yourself on the way toward the end, practicing endurance again. We'd be happy to help you with that. We'd pray with you and for you. If you're subject to invitation, why don't you come while together we stand and sing.